You are listening to Read Comics, the 23rd issue episode, Incense thingy.
Incense?
And this is our comic book book club, and this week we're talking about...
Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8.
And this is Marty.
Florence.
Jason.
Mike.
And Susie.
Yay!
Actually, the comic book club one.
Yay! Is this your first comic book club?
Choice?
Yep.
Wait, whose choice was it? Was it yours or was it Susie's?
Whose is the technical?
Technically, it's Susie's month because I used my month for Walking Dead.
Oh, that's right.
But I also kind of chose for her.
But with her blessing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now, are we doing the whole series? Or are
well,
we doing the
they
last?
They made me read it all, so.
Yeah, we've all read it all, so.
Yeah, I think originally we were just going to do the last two arcs, but since we all just crammed the whole series and reading and rereading it,
which should be 18 issues.
Yep.
So, Florence told me to come up with questions.
Ooh.
I have come up with 13 questions. We will see how many we get through.
Excellent.
The first question is not number one, it is 0.5, because I came up with it after I came up with number one. but go around and say what your prior experience with the Buffyverse is. And I will start saying that my prior experience is that I watched it every episode, you know, when it first came on, from the pilot on, and I watched every episode of Angel after that, and I have read every issue of Season 8 as it came out, and I've read every issue of Angel Season 6 as it's been coming out.
And
I've read many other Buffy-related comics, although not every single one that's been published.
No, I'm surprised reading the comics I didn't see Jay or Silent Bob even once. Or is that a different universe?
That's a different
universe. That's the View Askew universe.
Oh,
Askew universe?
Askew universe, yes. But they've made cameos in Terry Moore stuff.
Yes.
They do?
Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Does Buffy make appearances in Terry Moore stuff?
Not
that would
that
be
I've
kind
seen.
Of a weird crossover.
Yeah. They might have made references, but not actual.
I can imagine
well,
them watching Buffy
well,
in that
Terry
universe.
Moore's now writing Runaways, which was once
right.
written by Joss Whedon. So there is kind of a weird little thing going on now.
Yes.
Combining the S universe with Buffyverse.
Not really. Well, Terry Moore is
a good
guy.
Okay, so that was my prior experience. What is everybody else's prior experience?
Well, I also started watching Buffy from day one and watched through to the end of Buffy. I kind of faltered on Angel when it went to a different night, and I still haven't ever finished Angel. And
last season is very different, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it's something that I probably will go back and finish. I did watch Buffy from beginning to end. I had to catch up when I had gone to Europe for, excuse me, 3.5 months. So I did not watch it every single week. And there are 2 or 3 episodes that I still have not seen. I haven't seen Inca Mummy Girl. I haven't seen the Praying Mantis episode. And I haven't seen the one where all the girls are after Jonathan.
I actually think 2 out of 3 of those might be sitting right there, right now.
Those are
the other room.
3 episodes of Buffy I haven't seen. And I do have to say that in season 6 and 7, part of me wants to pretend that they don't exist. And at the end of season 7, when the episode ended, I kind of cheered a little bit, going, "Free at last! I'm free! I'm not tied down to a Tuesday night show anymore." I was worn out on Buffy.
That's not an uncommon thing.
But here's another little bit of trivia connecting me with Buffy. Have you ever seen the Buffy guidebooks published by Virgin Publishing from the UK by Keith Topping?
No, I don't think so.
They're paper, regular paperback sized. I want to say they're called Slayer, and I'm in the acknowledgments on those.
Ooh.
So are you?
I'm friends with Keith Topping, the author.
That's pretty cool.
Okay, so that gives Jason probably gets the most accredited award. But let's hear everybody else.
Well, I'll give mine. So I started watching Buffy while season 4 was airing, thanks to Susie's persistent efforts to convince me that I would love it, which I resisted at the time because I was a fool. And when I finally, I think I was visiting Chicago for like a week, and Susie sat me down with key episodes while she went to work, and I just...
Yeah, basically, I didn't sit you down, I just like left the house for many hours at a time with a couple of cassette videos.
Yep.
Buffy, like from seasons 2 and 3, maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yep, so I got hooked, and Susie got me caught up, and then from then on, I watched every single Tuesday night. And season 4, of course, is the season of Tara, so that also got me very attached emotionally. Even though season 4, I think a lot of fans who started from the beginning thought it was weak for me starting out, because I was in the first flush of all the excitement, and because of Tara, I totally loved it.
Right, and that was also the year Spike became a regular. It was just very...
Yeah, I'm a big Spike fan.
A good place to start to jump on.
Yeah. I mean, I hated Riley, but that didn't ruin it for me. Gave me someone to root against. And so I went on to watch every episode of Angel, which I actually grew to like more than Buffy. And when Buffy ended, I was kind of ready for that. But when Angel ended, I was really upset. I thought that was totally premature.
Yeah. They had a few more years in them.
Yeah. And I went ahead and got Frey as it came out, the 8-series mini arc that Joss wrote about a future Slayer.
Which I also reread in preparation for this.
Excellent. I did not. But there were things that were being revealed in Frey about the future that are now being called back in the season 8 arc. So that's, I found it really interesting too. But yes, yeah, so I'm a huge fan. I actually used to try to get other friends hooked and show them and rewatch episodes so that I could get people introduced. And I am slowly and patiently working on Marty.
That's a good segue into my history of Buffy. I watched the movie when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
I saw the movie when it came out.
Me too.
And then
I rejected the movie when it came out because I thought it looked stupid.
I didn't see it until maybe the fifth season
of the actual show.
No, I'm pretty sure I thought the movie was really dumb, and I watched,
that was pretty awesome.
No, that was the stupidest part, and I think I even watched, like, maybe a single episode of the first season with somebody who insisted that it was awesome, and was completely disgusted.
That couldn't have been me.
It might have been you, actually.
Oh, shut up. Find me, bald boy.
Mike?
I read the comics.
Mike has read the comics.
In fact, when it comes to Joss Whedon, I have pretty much taken in pretty much all of it except for Buffy.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, we haven't really mentioned Serenity.
I've read not all the Serenity comics. I know there was one series that came out before the last one.
Before the movie, yeah.
But I saw this, finally saw the series and saw the movie in the theater. And I read Astonishing X-Men and Runaways from Marvel, but all of which have nothing to do with Buffy as far as I know. And I don't know anything else he does that doesn't have to do with Buffy in some way, shape, or form.
Soon to be Dollhouse, but that won't be out for a few more months.
Yes.
Well, and don't forget the recent web thing.
Sugar Shock.
That's
what you keep. Oh, Dr.
Horrible.
Yes, I've seen that as well.
Yeah.
I've seen Dr. Horrible
as well. Which Mike has on his iPhone Touch. Or iPod Touch.
Yes.
And it is awesome.
With my friends.
Yes,
so,
I have seen all of those things as well.
So let's talk about comics.
Yeah, we should bring up the comic.
All right, so question number one, I will read as I wrote it. Comic Xander is hot, yes, no?
Yes.
Yeah, hotter than real life Xander, in my
really?
Opinion. Yeah. I was never a big fan of, what's his name?
Nicholas Brendan.
Nicholas Brendan's, you know, sexiness factor. I mean, I'm not saying that during the swim team episode that I didn't, you know, I didn't avert my eyes or anything. But he, you know, his face just has never really appealed to me.
Aww.
In the same way that others have. Angel both have this weird mouth thing going on that kind of reminds me of the puppets on the show Pinwheel from Nickelodeon.
I remember that show, but I don't remember anything about the puppets.
They have very puppetish mouths that kind of freak me out.
Have you seen the puppet episode of Angel?
I have not seen the puppet episode of Angel.
They're awesome.
I have seen it, and I attest to its awesomeness.
But anyway, yeah, so here's the other aesthetic question, Spike versus Angel.
Yeah, I have to say that, believe it or not, Spike is too skinny for me. So, definitely it would be Angel over Spike, but there's been many other hotties on both. I mean, we've already talked about this. Who in Buffy is for me? Gunn,
oh, yeah.
Principal Wood.
Okay, well, yeah.
We have had this discussion.
All right.
But also, so anyway, but not just, like, yes, he's hot, but, like, it's an interesting, like, they've definitely gone in a way more positive arc for Xander in the comics than they did on the show.
It's true. He seems to have pulled it together and have purpose and focus.
Well, except that, you know, his, yeah.
Well, yeah. No,
spoiler
that's,
alert!
That's separate.
His girlfriend dies. They kill her.
Yeah,
I know.
Kill off. He like falls for her.
And
the
you
person.
Know, I gotta say that seemed almost like it was done just because Xander can't find happiness. I mean, it's like, why did they kill her? I really felt there was no
because
reason.
They needed to kill somebody in
right.
order to make it effective, and they couldn't kill.
But she was
well,
a slayer.
Well, I mean, Bigfoot
right?
have
yeah.
killed one of the main characters, but. They weren't going to at this point.
I don't think that they needed to kill somebody necessarily.
I think Joss brings the pain. I mean, that's
yeah.
his signature. Like,
yeah.
It was definitely kill the girlfriend moment. It wasn't kill a slayer. It was cause pain to Xander.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But which I thought
to make,
I thought
to make the death more poignant
for
sure.
Well, have I told you my rule of Joss? Which I actually discovered while reading Frank is that basically whoever it's going to hurt the reader or the viewer or whatever the most to kill, that is who you kill or who gets killed. And
yeah.
in that case, it was Lou and on, you know, and Serena. By the way, lots and lots and lots of spoilers for everything having to do with Joss Whedon right now. Turn off if you don't want to be spoiled and you haven't seen, like, everything he's ever done.
Well, and it's amazing because I have seen it all, and yet it gets me every time. Like,
well, yeah.
I just hook, line, and sinker. I get all upset every time he kills someone, and I don't see it coming.
And he's spread it around now.
Yeah.
Law of Jaws is spreading far and wide. And Brian
so
K. Vaughan caught
Horrible.
It, and yeah, it's just going everywhere. But anyway.
Do you not know? I haven't seen Doctor Horrible.
Oh,
you
haven't
seen Doctor
Horrible?
I've only seen the first
one.
Don't
ask us that question.
You're going to watch it after this.
Yes.
I've only seen the first
one. We're
going to
tie it down.
Okay, I'm not saying anything about that.
Okay.
I can't believe you. I still haven't watched it.
Should we move on to the next question, or do we have
yes.
any other...
No,
we'll say I didn't weep at the death of Doctor Horrible.
I think we've discussed Xander's hot factor.
Well, Mike actually earlier said he
didn't
like him.
Didn't like the eye patch.
Yeah.
Got tired of it.
There's a reason for it. I mean, he really
he lost an eye. And
it's not an aesthetic thing. It's a necessary.
So this is one of the things, though, about this universe is that everything has consequences. That they don't just undo pain or damn, you know, injury. Like,
right.
There's some natural accelerated healing
very
stuff
late
going on.
In the last season of Buffy, Xander has his eye gouged out, and he does not, it doesn't just grow back, or they magic it back, or anything, it's gone.
Yeah.
But it seems like they could magic it back.
It does seem like they could, but they haven't yet.
Well, it's the same way it seems like they could have paid Buffy a stipend for being a Slayer, and yet she had to work in a fast food joint. There are some things we have to let go because they want their characters to go through hardships.
Okay, so question number two. What do you think about the U.S. government's position on Slayers and about their methods?
It seems a little forced to me. It's probably the least favorite thing of the series for me.
What's the U.S. government's position on vampires? That's
what
I
don't
know
that yet.
Well, you know,
they have the initiative.
When I wasn't overly surprised, for one, you know, in any fiction work, the government is always evil. It doesn't matter who it is. Even Barack Obama would be evil in any literature.
How sure are you he's not?
You don't. You have to take his word for it now. The other thing I would say about that is it's not a surprise that the government takes the stance that they would, because any, you know, civilian power would be a threat to the government, especially when they first revealed their stance was looking at the crater of Sunnydale. And I don't know what happened there, but it's a crater of a U.S. city. I think the government would have some reaction to that. So
it's not unestablished before. I reread Tales of the Slayers too, and which was a book that came out a few years ago, telling various short stories about slayers from the past. And in the very first one, there is the very first Slayer, which we had seen in the TV series before, killing a vampire, and then a little girl brings a basket of fruit from the elders of the village saying, "Thank you, now please go away."
Right.
Because anything with that much power and that's that close to humanity and yet different is scary.
Yeah, definitely true. Well, what do you think of the government's theory that if the Slayers did win, that they would turn on humanity next?
That's the part that, yeah, just really... I think it's stretch.
You might end up with
mutants.
A faction of Slayers doing that. But all Slayers everywhere? Probably not.
Well, I think a more interesting concept came up later on when somebody, and I don't remember who, mentioned that the possibility that all, you know, there weren't as many demons before when there was just Buffy. I'm sure there was more than she could handle, but there weren't as many as there are today, and that
now
has
that there
to
are
do
more
with
slayers.
The increased number of Slayers.
So that was mentioned more as a subjective perception on Buffy's part. It wasn't mentioned as, like, absolute fact. So I didn't really take that as real.
Well, there's the demon that... that Willow and Buffy go to see to get assistance from, and they basically say, "I would be perfectly happy to see all you Slayers go away because you guys cause more trouble than you solve," or something like that.
Well,
so.
that might be true that they stir up trouble, but I'm not sure that their presence generates more demons.
Yeah, I don't think that's the way this universe works.
Well,
it couldn't
know...
possible, or at least that, you know, suddenly. You know, the balance of there being hundreds of Slayers creates more demons. It's possible that the balance of there being a whole bunch of new Slayers around caused demons that weren't doing anything to feel like they've been, you know, wars been declared and start counteracting.
True.
But yeah, I don't think it's there has to be, you know, a certain ratio of demons to Slayers.
What do we know about how all the Slayers were created? I mean, we know that it uses... somehow her weapon was involved,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But what else do we know?
So that was revealed both in the TV show and the periphery on Frey. There is no origin story. Oh.
Yeah,
what?
So what is it?
So at one point they just activated all the possible women, all the women
yeah.
in the world that could have become Slayers.
Yeah,
the
on the series,
of the Slayer's death.
it had always been that there was one Slayer at a time. And once one died, the next one, who was, you know, up until that point, just a normal girl, is activated. And you know, so on and so on. And there was always this, you know, however many potential girls that might become the Slayer when the current one dies. And then at the very end of the series, when, you know, odds are all against them, and there's this evil force killing off the possible girls, they find the spell, a very powerful spell. They use the weapon to activate all of them at once. And so now there's all these people, girls who might have been Slayers or who might have not been Slayers, are now all Slayers.
I sense the crossover with Highlander coming up.
There can be only one.
Marty, was your question about how all the Slayers got activated, or about how the first Slayer got created?
No. About how all the Slayers got activated.
Oh, okay.
So,
it's very
but
much...
That is, like, the physical how is not... I guess there are two levels of how. There's how they were activated, then how specifically, you know, like, what happened in the spell. But, you know, maybe that's just magic.
That
I don't know.
We don't know. That's all the flip bottom.
Yeah, exactly. So, the Buffy folks behind Buffy are very open about the fact that there are times at which they want something to happen, and it's like, magic spell, get from here to there. They're not particularly interested in the details and the mechanisms of justifying how that happened so much. It's just moving the story forward.
They're not going to provide the science behind warp engines.
What was everybody's favorite arc?
We should write a book, The Science of Buffy the Vampire.
There is.
It exists.
Yes,
what,
there is.
What was everyone's favorite
arc
in the comic series?
Well, it's easily the Brian K. Vaughan for me.
Like, which was which issues?
Not the last arc, but the arc before it.
The Dracula arc?
Yeah. No, that wasn't Brian K. Vaughan.
No.
Yeah, that was...
Brian
like
K. Vaughan was the...
Faith?
Brian K. Vaughan, that was the Faith one.
Yes.
No, Brian K. Vaughan...
Yeah?
Oh, you're right. Never mind.
You're talking about the arc with the Chinese vampires and Dracula. Which was not by Brian K. Vaughan.
It was Wolves at the Gate.
It was
by Drew Goddard.
Yes.
Drew Goddard.
I agree that was the best one also.
You know what? I thought it was Brian K. Vaughan. I feel dumb now. But yeah, this was easily the most interesting to me.
You should feel dumb, Marty. Me as well. I agree that that was the best arc.
I actually think I'm going to go with the Faith one, having just reread it.
What about you, Jason?
I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed both the Faith arc and the Wolves at the Gate, but I am kind of enjoying this Frey one, too. It's hard for me to say which I think is the best.
That's by far the least interesting one.
With the...
The Faith one?
No, the
well,
right
and,
right
and the thing is that it's not the Frey part that I'm enjoying. It's the present-day stuff that I'm enjoying. I mean, I really enjoyed the Dracula one. It was definitely a lot jokier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually... I have to say that the writing, the dialogue, gets a little over the top for me sometimes.
Sometimes.
Okay.
Well, because the show... One criticism for the show, which I never actually thought was... a well-founded criticism, but one criticism was that they made the dialogue too clever for the people saying it.
Mm.
I mean, that was a criticism I had heard from the show.
I'm not going to talk about the show because...
Yeah, we can't.
That's
we
a bad idea.
It.
Well, I mean, basically, you know, you have all these
set people in the room.
A lot of the characters made these cultural references that, like, Charisma Carpenter. What was her character's name?
Cordelia.
Cordelia would not know who Zeppo was. I'm sorry. Cordelia would not know who Zeppo was at all.
Cordelia was not as dumb as she appeared.
She wasn't dumb. But do you think Cordelia watched old Three Stooges?
Well, actually, I think... See, this is the fun thing, is that you just got that bit wrong. Zeppo doesn't have anything to do with the Three Stooges.
What?
He was a Marx brother.
Oh, you're right, you're right. Okay.
And so
I did get that wrong.
These things that get into our collective, you know, psyche that we don't always know exactly where they come from,
but
we can
but
reference
it's
them.
The same thing. I don't think that Cordelia would have watched old Marx Brothers episodes. I don't think she would know who Groucho, Chico, and Harpo were.
Jason's dialogue is too clever for the person speaking it.
I get where you're coming from, but you know, I just feel like when people are criticized, like more like people were criticizing how unrealistic the dialogue was, and how you know nobody actually talks like that. It's well, nobody ever actually, even in Shakespeare's days, has spoke like the Shakespearean characters, and nobody spoke like any of the Jane Austen characters.
Maybe, maybe.
It's just,
but again. And like I said, I don't really necessarily buy it. I did totally buy the dialogue in the TV show. But I can see where the criticisms came from.
Can
but
we,
now
can...
I have the same criticism for the dialogue in the comics.
Okay. I was going to say, let's try to focus a little bit more on the comics since... Obviously,
well, yeah, you know, every once in a while there would be a reference that just didn't quite ring true. But
we outnumber
you.
You're outnumbered, Mike.
Fine.
Sorry, Susie, can you repeat that?
Oh, yeah, I agree that every once in a while in the show and in the comics there are references that just don't quite ring true to whichever character is saying it, but the writer wanted to get across, like, the idea of a Zeppo.
Yeah, I guess what I mean with the dialogue in the comics is that every word balloon is, it's just, there's too much of it that none of them can open their mouth without having something clever and wise-ass.
I found that a little bit more, one of the most interesting parts about the storytelling, especially in Joss Whedon's stories.
Yeah.
It's interesting that me and Marty, who never saw the TV show, chose arts not written by Joss Whedon as our favorites. So did you, Susie, as well, actually.
I did, yeah.
Wait, Florence never said what her favorite arc was.
I'm torn. Rereading it, like, each one, I was like, oh, I forgot about this. This is so great.
It's true. Like, there are certain things that, like, I really love the single issue just before the thing that was a Joss issue. And,
oh, yeah.
Like,
that's
I think of it more as, like, a single story, too. So it's hard to pick one arc, but I did like, yeah, I really did like the Faith one on rereading it. Like, when I first read it, it was just, you know, interesting and move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that.
It brings a little more, I can't remember think of the word I'm looking for.
There were so many parts of it that were heartbreaking to me that really, I really connected with. The Faith arc, and also the standalone, you know, nameless Buffy stand-in.
Uh-huh.
The main problem I had with the whole series was that it relied so much of references to the TV show. It was clearly written for the fans of the TV show, which is fine.
It is called Season 8.
Yeah, which is totally fine. That's not what I object to, but I couldn't immerse myself into it because I had no frame of reference for what they were talking about. The Faith arc is a big part of that.
Yeah.
That huge history between Faith, Buffy, and Giles. I had to have explained to me to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And I still, you know, don't fully understand all the details behind it.
But then that goes back to, you know, picking up any comic book, sort of, or any story in the middle.
No,
like,
not always. Not always. I disagree with that.
Just in the X-Men.
No, not even in the X-Men, to a certain extent. Because I didn't have to read the first 180 issues of the X-Men before I got into it.
Florence and I were talking this afternoon,
yeah,
arguing actually about which would take longer, to read all the back issues of the X-Men or to watch all the episodes of Buffy.
Watching all the episodes of Buffy, I can almost guarantee it.
That was what I said.
You really think so?
You know, early X-Men, like a lot of early comics, are a lot more dialogue heavy.
Plus, a large number of the early X-Men were reprints.
Oh,
so
that's true.
But anyway, one of the cardinal rules of comic books for writing, anyway, and I think this goes back to the late Marvel editor Mark Moonwall, is that every comic should be written as if it was somebody's first comic. Which Jason objects to, but there is a very valid point to that, I think. You don't want to coddle the readers, and you don't want to dumb down the story for
that's
long
what
time
writing
stories.
Every mm-hmm. issue as if it was someone's first issue. Thing,
no,
I think
no,
it
that's
does.
A good way to
that
do.
Coddles the reader.
I don't think so.
Especially
I don't
these
so
days where
there
you can look stuff
reader.
Up.
There are ways to coddle the reader doing that, but it doesn't have to be that way.
What's funny because
I'd rather be fondled as a reader myself.
I was thinking about like cuckold the reader.
Well,
as I was reading it, there were many points where I was like, okay, yes, you're restating things I've seen already. Now let's get to the new stuff. You know, like I could see a lot of the similarities
yeah.
referencing.
The catching people up bit. Although
mm-hmm.
I think they did it rather artfully that it didn't bother me that much.
Oh, no, it didn't bother me, but I felt like I noticed it a lot. Like yes, okay, I know that bit. Like
interesting, because I didn't notice that part at all. I mean, I felt like especially the first few issues, like honestly, until we got to the Faith issues, I really felt like the whole thing was a wash. You know, like I did not understand half of it.
Yeah. The thing is that though, from the end of Buffy to the beginning of season 8,
mm-hmm.
a lot of stuff happens where
even
the Buffy fans have to are like, "What the hell's going on?"
Right, you're along for the ride.
When they say there are three Buffys out there,
yeah,
what? Three Buffys? What? I mean,
yeah,
like, we know there's all these layers, but three Buffys?
I didn't. That part didn't bug me. I just saw it as she's a huge target, so they had to put decoys out.
And, well, and they explained that. But the thing is that there is this time has passed
mm-hmm.
between the end of the TV series and the beginning of the comic series that people who read the comic series also have to fill in along with everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. But without the knowledge of the previous stories, and relying so heavily on the previous stories, the only thing that really kept me interested or kept me reading was the reading dialogue.
No. All right.
Okay.
All right, I can see that.
All right, so I've got question number 3.
That's all as far as we've gone?
Yeah, but
yeah.
It's 3.5.
Go.
So, threesome, woo! And then... what non-Buffy first people cameo in the dreamscape? Because there's an issue early on where we enter Buffy's dreamscape where she's in every dream she could possibly have, and you see all these little boxes, and most of it is, you know, people from her past and her life. But I saw two people that aren't technically part of the Buffyverse.
Okay. Which issue are you talking about?
I think it's issue 4. Maybe 5.
Okay, so yes, Woo Threesome is referring to the Spike Angel naked in chains.
Yes.
We're
usually
going to start talking about...
They're both naked, but Buffy is dressed like a nurse.
Yeah.
And there are cherubs, and it's really funny.
Pretty awesome.
So
much slash fiction exists for
oh,
that
yes.
moment.
Yeah.
Looking at that picture, I'd say Spike is the hotter of the two.
He is, in my opinion. I'm not an Angel fan, aesthetically.
Well, I'm not a fan of the actor, at least appearance-wise.
I'm actually more of a fan of the actor than I am of the character.
Oh, Susie, I've been...
The actor totally won me over by just allowing himself to be so made, you know, ridiculous over the years.
David, what is it, Boreanaz or something?
Boreanaz, yeah.
Although he does appear in public in, like, all plaid outfits carrying a little dog as an accessory.
Ugh.
I've seen a picture
what?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, and he's married to Playboy Bunny. So, he's not quite...
I've seen one or two episodes of Bones. I can't really get into Bones.
I've been getting more into it lately.
I've not seen a single episode of that.
I've been meaning to ask you, Susie. Have you seen or are you going to see Twilight?
I have not, and I probably will not unless it's, like, on cable and I'm curious. I've not
okay.
read any of the books either.
Okay.
Okay, so I see Joss himself in one of the boxes.
All right, that was one. And the other one is, like, you only see a part of them.
All right.
I'm really not seeing... I mean, I'm seeing Jenny Calendar, which is sad.
Who's Joss?
Oh, Batman?
Yeah. Or possibly Batgirl, or Wildcat, or Black Panther, or somebody
okay.
with a cowl that has pointy ears.
Sure.
Huh.
That was it. That was question 3.
Okay.
Nice.
All right.
One
One thing that I want to bring up that about Joss Whedon's writing, and this another turnoff for me, and I'm being very negative about it so far, but I did enjoy the series overall.
Okay.
Was that between issues and sometimes from page to page, it would feel like I missed a huge section of story. And I'd have to go back and realize, okay, I didn't miss anything. He probably just hasn't explained everything yet. So
yeah. Grant Morrison wrote this?
Well, and I think that was much worse in the early issues.
Yeah, and the reason I remember that is because I particularly remember that being the case in this issue.
Yep.
Well, and so as we're flipping through, this happens to be issue 3, this reference to the rat cage and stuff, I don't know if you guys picked this up, but that actually happened to Amy. That was back season 2 or 3?
I think season 2.
Yeah.
I was happier not knowing that.
I did notice the non-Joss Whedonverse cameo that appeared in the Faith arc.
Hmm. Yes, I was going to get to that, but okay, we'll skip ahead to question 6. Did you see the Doctor and Rose?
Did you get
the Alan Moore reference?
Oh, I remember it at the time being quite asked me, but I did not catch it upon rereading.
I think that was the first or second Faith issue.
Yeah, something like that. And it's easy to throw off because it's a red box instead of a blue. But yeah, in one of the Faith issues, I think the one where they go to England, there's like just in the side of a panel somewhere is like
it's
somebody who
that.
Looks very much like the Doctor number 10 and a blonde girl stepping out of a phone box, but it's red instead of blue.
Nice.
That's because they have to use a red phone box rather than a blue police box.
It's
because
copyrighted.
The blue police box is now copyrighted by the BBC.
Ah.
The excuse me.
As well, it should be.
The UK Metropolitan Police Force has had to license the use of the police call box back from the BBC.
Are you serious?
Yes.
That is.
Well, do they
most...
even still have police?
Yeah, they've actually reintroduced them.
Oh, that's so cool. I didn't catch that.
We found it.
And it's very clearly them.
Yes.
I mean, it's
all right.
Very prominent.
What's next?
Okay, so back to question 4. Have you noticed a difference between the comics and TV story-wise, like narratively or tonally or other?
Well, I mean, there is the difference in pacing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's definitely a huge pacing difference.
Well, these pictures don't move.
Yeah, I'm not just talking, like, I'm not talking, you know, plot-wise a difference or... but just how they're telling the story or the tone of the story.
They're telling the story. I mean, it's the whole that we had to wait a week between each episode. Now we have to wait a month plus between each episode, and the episodes aren't as long as the weekly episodes were. Not that there weren't times where we had to wait more than a week between episodes, but it's...
So
when people talk about comics being the same as episodic television, not really, Trinity, maybe, 52, Countdown, the weekly comics, but not the monthlies. There's too much time that passes between them, and not enough goes on in the actual issues themselves for it to be truly episodic.
I actually think, though, that to me it's a positive point on the comics that they have tailored it entirely to the new medium. I think it speaks well to, even though they've got a lot of TV writers brought in for this, that they all are writing for comics. They're not writing a TV episode that is then put to pictures.
I've noticed, like, with the comics is it feels much broader, and they're, you know, in the episodes there would be the place, you know, that it was generally set in the same places, same several places, but constantly, and then they'd have to blow something up in order to build a new set.
that's true. Yeah,
big props to them. They did that. But they did change it up at all. But also, the thing that I have noticed that they haven't done yet, which they used to do on the series pretty often, was Buffy was really innovative with the format of television and what you could do with it. And like they would have the silent episodes or the musical episodes and things, and they haven't really done anything like that hasn't been done with comics yet.
They've even added a supervillain in.
Yeah.
Totally. And they haven't, like, the closest they've gotten to that, I think, is when Willow was with her sort of guardian, magical guardians, and there was a wolf woman and a, or an animal woman and a nature woman, and then there was, like, a woman made out of equations.
Yeah.
Like, that's using the medium really well, and I haven't seen them do much more than that yet. Not saying, and it's only been 18 issues, that's, they're still finding their ground, but, you know,
I'd like to say that
I want to see more of that.
I'd like to say that the sexuality is you know, breaking the barriers of comics, but not really. I mean,
well,
oh, I thought you were making the point of that it's just more than it. Not well, maybe in the later seasons, not as, but
brings
like
up
more
a
than it had been in the TV show.
When they give Andrew a boyfriend and they make out or they show them sweaty in bed with each other, I mean, no offense, but having Buffy in bed with a hot chick
that
doesn't really upset the fanboys.
That was one question I wanted to ask was everybody, what does everybody think of pseudo-lesbian Buffy here? Is it true to her? Obviously, I have no idea.
I think it is true to her, and I think that it's correct that she does not that she's not pretending to be anything. She's charmed by the love of this girl and very lonely, and it's fun. And I think that that's true to the experience of women being open to that, even if they don't identify as gay.
You know,
yeah,
so,
she didn't immediately just say, okay, I've slept with a girl, I am gay. You know, she...
No, but
okay.
She was offended a little bit when... was her name Satsu, something like that?
Satsu
said that, I know you're not suddenly gay. And she's like, wait, how do you know? Did I do something wrong? So she seemed a little bit concerned that she wasn't perceived as perfectly.
Someone did accuse her of being something of a phobe.
Yeah.
That was the girlfriend of Willow. But, okay, and that's Kennedy. It's because everyone fucking hates Kennedy.
Okay.
Buffy never treated Tara any, you know...
True.
My
yeah,
problem with
Kennedy,
the whole...
like, there was problems with the character. I think a lot of the hate, having recently rewatched season 7, was... there was just something really off about the actress. Her acting style just left something to be desired.
It was too soon after Tara. It was implausible to me at the time. It was kind of forced down our throats. And they got way more screen time, way more sex screen time than Tara did.
Yeah.
Like,
it was.
My big problem with the lesbian scene was that would never happen with the straight leading male character. Never see him turn temporarily gay. At least,
it would never happen
in real life, but it would never happen in a comic book.
That is fair.
I got what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that putting Buffy, or even Willow for that matter, in a sexual position with another woman, again, does not upset the straight male fanboys. Not that I know how many straight male fanboys actually buy and read Buffy.
There's four, at least.
And,
so I have,
and Andrew's sexuality is used as a running gag.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that does fit with Andrew's character.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew has always been comic relief, but...
his gayness is not the part of him that's been the comic relief. But, yes, it is true that is his character, and he's pretty definitely gay, but, yeah.
And just come out already,
I mean,
Andrew. God damn it.
So he's not
the actor
out?
Recently did.
No. What? The actor what?
Yeah, the actor who plays Andrew...
Really?
He came out.
Oh, he did come out. Oh, finally.
But the character is not out.
No.
No, the character is not yet out.
Well, but it was a major plot point that he was in love with another man at one point. Like, that was his...
He was in love with Warren.
Right. The character is not out because
the character is not actually
out to himself.
Right. Out to the audience, but not out to the characters. So, I have a...
out to himself.
Right.
Oh, okay. He hasn't admitted. So, I have an anecdote that I quickly want to give. I was in the comic store on Friday night, and I overheard this girl talking to her boyfriend, presumably boyfriend, about, it was about Brian K. Vaughan's series, what's it called?
Runaways?
No,
the Last Man?
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, thank you. Because there's a new Ex Machina out as well.
Oh.
And she's like, it's still going on? And I'm like, when did it ever conclude? Like, what part? Even if you, like, I don't care what you were reading, there's never been a conclusion. And so I kind of laughed about it and started talking to her, and she was, like, eager to talk to somebody, I think anybody. So we ended up kind of talking for a while, and I asked her if she was reading Buffy because, you know, he had written an arc.
Marty, why are you picking up girls in the comic shop? You're married.
Yeah, right in front of her boyfriend. And her boyfriend was kind of suspicious at first, too. So I casually dropped my wife into the conversation to appease him.
Flashed his ring on his finger.
Anyway, so we talked a little bit about Buffy, and she is not reading it specifically because she doesn't think Buffy would be a lesbian.
But that's such a misnomer.
I know.
So she just heard that much about it.
She had read up to that point and stopped.
See,
oh.
It kind of...
Yeah.
Okay, who wrote... Was it Joss that wrote the Buffy being a lesbian, or was it...
No,
the
it's that...
No, it was Drew Goddard. But, yeah, Joss is doing like he did on the show, being, you know, the executive producer and signing off and making sure everything...
What
is
Drew Goddard's...
Within his vision. And he's the one who set up the attraction between her, or the crush, at least, part.
A true love kiss.
Yeah.
So,
what is Drew Goddard's Buffy chops?
He definitely wrote for Angel. Did he write for Buffy as well?
I think he did.
Okay. Like, he'd been around for a long time.
So, are they just trying to ruin any / fiction writer's future... success because if they present everything and
well,
SCD,
canon.
Yeah,
they just you know
in
we're
the
going
comic series and they don't
like,
have to go to.
She's surrounded by women. She is surrounded by women all the time. She's had a very very slow year as they have established, and this girl who's really cute has got a huge crush on her, and she's a little more mature than she used to be. So it doesn't feel like that out of character to me.
It really is. And okay. It's the first... Oh, okay, it's not the first time. So she's had Spike and Angel. But, like, to get to have a one-night stand with someone else with superpowers, how often does that come along? Like, that's pretty tempting as well.
I was thinking, like, that there must be orgies all the time and really rough sex.
Well,
because they can just, like, throw each other around. They, like, they get hurt or break an arm or something, it heals right away.
How
six.
Much were you thinking about this, Marty?
I mean, even before the whole... Kiss by the True Love and the Rolling the Sack with Satsu. There was very serious lesbian undertones throughout the whole series, especially between Willow, Buffy, and Dawn.
Trinity is wrong.
I mean,
well, I know they're two sisters, but I mean more between Willow and both of them.
I mean,
wait, let's go back to the sisters thing.
The whole series was created by a lesbian, so.
Okay. But Joss Whedon's not a lesbian.
Are you kidding me?
Well, he is
such a lesbian.
He is, but not.
I object to any straight man identified as a lesbian.
Joss Whedon
is
as close as you can get to a lesbian and be a man.
Well, I do love him. I mean, I claim
him as one
of us.
Loves women.
What's that?
And that he's if you're getting the chance that he loves and admires women, and that he's not the stereotypical like.
It was
macho
a joke.
Guy,
it was a joke.
That's. I kind of get where you're going, but I.
But I kind of wish he was the template of straight man rather than getting a whole new identity.
I didn't really care for Willow's sudden kind of jealousy and curiosity about Buffy's experimentation.
I don't think it was jealousy, but curiosity.
Oh, there was totally
for
jealousy.
Sure.
There's totally jealousy when she basically told her. Yeah, it's a good thing you didn't try that on me or something like that.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, she clearly was jealous.
Okay,
yeah.
Maybe there was a jealousy.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's also pretty plausible. They've been best friends for years and years and years.
So
does that imply that lesbians can't be friends with straight women, though, do you think?
Well, in the same way that men can't be friends with women.
Or gay men.
Or gay men.
well, we know that's not true.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, Marty ain't so straight.
Yeah, again, like, I didn't feel the jealousy so much as, like, a little bit of, like, Buffy's encroaching on her turf, and also, yeah, rampant curiosity.
Yeah. Well, because what Buffy is doing is different from what Willow did.
Yeah.
Okay, so, next question.
Next question.
I got another question, too.
Oh, okay, as Susie's looking up questions, I just had a comment, after looking through all these again, about the fantastically beautiful covers. I'm just so entranced by them.
Well, by which ones?
The watercolor ones.
The watercolor.
I got as many of those as I could. I guess I've got some exceptions. But.
Are they all alternate covers? Alternate covers? Which one of them?
The painted covers. I don't know if they're all watercolors.
Centaur.
Hmm?
I love the Dawn Centaur cover.
I don't have that one.
Yeah.
That's
that
the most,
gorgeous,
that was
yeah.
the most recent
issue. Issue 18
yeah,
watercolor.
She's got the alternate cover.
I probably bought
who
that
does everybody think is the guy behind the mask? Because obviously it's somebody we know, but I don't because I haven't seen the show at all.
I don't know if it's somebody we know.
They've been teasing that so much that I think it isn't somebody that we know. But that was one of my questions. Is Twilight someone
the
we
whole
know?
Lifting, scratch, scratch,
I think
scratch,
it's very implied
it
that
down.
It's somebody we know.
I loved that, though. I so, like, to
well,
me, that was...
Well, not short. So they didn't... Somehow
yeah,
bring,
I mean,
they didn't bring Jonathan
we would
back.
Basically have to go through every non-short, not-already seen
it's
male
Oz.
Character there has ever been.
Wait, Oz is short, too.
Oz is very
Oz
short.
Is Seth Green, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Although Twilight, you know, the whole mood thing, you know.
Okay, yeah,
well,
you know.
Well, who was you made me watch an episode where there were really tall dudes that were also silent, I think.
The gentleman.
They float, but yeah, that's not...
This guy talks a lot.
What are the
yeah.
chances that it's either Spike or Angel?
No, because for licensing and story reasons, they have their own...
Well, I saw something on the letter page that Angel was sold to IDW, I think,
yeah.
for the comic rights.
Right.
That.
Although,
Jonathan could...
said, like, he owns the characters, they're his, he can do what he wants
yeah.
with them, but I don't know
it could be just publishing rights for
just
his
a lot of what.
Spike has his own series, too, doesn't it?
Well, he had, like, a subset of Angel series. So they're in the same universe right now. They're in L.A., which has gone to hell,
well,
so they're not going to be just popping around.
Well, he put them in there. He put a scene with, you know, it was a dream scene, but it
yeah.
was still them. So.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely true. Oh, and a side note on Twilight, though?
But, yeah, I think they just, they don't want to come to
oh, it's
like,
different.
What's going on at IDW, which is really cool. Oh,
yes. So, I had forgotten Twilight existed. Like, because I was reading it, it completely had dropped my mind, not even a little bit significant to me, as I was, like, devouring the new arcs. So, yeah, I mean, to me, it's a sort of, like, it's much more a relic of the TV show, and to me doesn't seem very important to moving the plot along in the actual comic. So I don't really care if they ever get around to revealing it or making it more important. I kind of like what they're doing right now, which is going on these tangents about
so
the characters.
When they brought Warren back in with the missile was when you remember that Twilight existed.
Yeah. I remember that Warren existed.
Warren was the guy without skin, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And have you guys done
Willow
do
that
to him?
Yes.
No, we haven't gotten to see him perform.
Okay, so...
what?
Was, question five. Was Buffy right to cut off Giles?
What?
Was
Buffy...
Buffy
right to cut off Giles?
Cut him off?
She cut him off.
You are not real familiar with the
Giles-Buffy
yeah. relationship.
So here's the thing. We cannot answer this on the basis of the comic book.
Actually, and I have to say, I don't even remember why.
Because he's the one who put faith in the mission to take down the Slayer that was planning on taking down Buffy without telling her at all.
I got the impression they were
estranged
before that.
I see what you mean now. In the context of the comic book.
Immediate vicinity, but they were in communication and working together. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I was asking Florence about that earlier today when I was reading those because I had no basis of knowledge on what their relationship was, and I was really confused why they would get into these snits just because one person helped another one.
Yeah,
so Giles
too,
was basically her father.
Yeah.
Right?
What?
No,
Buffy's father.
Okay.
He was the father figure that took the place of her real father throughout the entire TV series.
Right, her real father never once makes an appearance. And,
no,
you know,
he does once
what?
Or twice, but, like, he basically established being lame.
Wasn't Elmanzo her father? Mm-hmm. Yeah, her father did show up in like one episode.
Wasn't it the episode where she was hospitalized?
No. I don't think so.
Anyway, I say she
and
was.
And he was played by Almanzo from Lost in the Prairie.
Right. Yeah, no, I think he's made like three appearances, but one actually as her father interacting with her in real time. The other time was in her head in a memory, and the other time was in her head in a hallucination.
Like alternate universe stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, sorry, I retract my statement. Anyway, but yes, Giles was her father figure, and he, during season six, decides that he is now her crutch, and he needs to basically abandon her to be an adult in order to allow her to be an adult. Yeah, exactly. So that's the point at which they physically split into different locations. And
But it's still a pretty good relationship.
But he was on the show less then. That was when he was like filming Manchild and stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he moved back to England with his family.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And so he does, he does reappear when needed occasionally after that. So that establishes why he's not, like, physically at the same camp as her. But the Faith thing is, Faith has really had a long and complicated arc. She's one of my favorite characters in the whole Buffyverse. But to Buffy, she's never been redeemed in any way. Like, to Buffy, she still remains the girl that she first met who betrayed her and she had to fight. And Buffy had to make the decision to be willing to kill
her. And really
Faith.
Went after her and, like, tried to hurt her pretty much as much, if not more, than Angel did.
Right.
Is Buffy as much a bitch in the series as she is in the comic series?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, so my answer to question number five, was she right? No, she was not. Because, and this is a big character flaw with her, and it has been for a long time, of not understanding that people have their own judgment and have to make their own decisions for themselves without consulting her, and even, like, I'd say Giles was considering her feelings.
Buffy,
Buffy's character is the epitome of pretty girl syndrome.
Well, here's the thing. Buffy, as a character, is a huge contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
She, and we saw this in the movie, she was the popular cheerleader. She became the outcast, but they try and say that she's still kind of the popular girl, that she's like, bridge. She has one foot in the popular world and one foot in the outcast world, but they never really made her fit in the popular world anymore, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
She always
fit
in way more in the outcast world,
well,
which makes it that it sometimes worked and sometimes didn't. And they're making her a lot more ditzy, it almost seems like, in the comics.
Hmm.
Than,
I didn't see ditzy at all in the comics.
I mean, ditzy in a... she's definitely still the kick-your-ass character, but they do seem to be putting a lot more of the former socialite type aspect into her. I felt that they ever did in the TV series.
They sometimes refer to her like, how she has such a, even a pimple will make her a wreck, or she loves going for shoe sales and that. And I didn't get that in there at all. I didn't get that from her.
That's the stuff that I felt that they really steered away from in the TV series.
Okay.
Plenty of references to that, though, in the TV series. It's just...
Well, they never showed it, though.
Well, she's upset when vampires mess up her clothes.
And she's a complete ditz the entire fucking series. Don't give me that bullshit.
I don't agree with that.
She totally is. Everything I've seen.
You've seen only the earliest episodes.
Right, you've seen, like, four episodes, five?
Maybe six.
Nothing past season, like, two or three?
My pop analysis of Buffy in the comic book is that, number one, well, obviously she's way too hard on herself and way too isolating.
Everyone
else is also the same way towards her. They're all expect too much from her.
Yes, well, that is definitely true.
And put her in way too harsh of a judgment. I mean, the sister, you can get away with it because they're sisters. But Everyone else practically sides with the people that she's so-called wrong, you know? Whether it be Faith or Dawn or Willow to a certain extent.
It's true. I mean, Buffy is, in a way, the least... She's sort of the least sympathetic character to the audience and to the people around her. I mean, she has all of the power and the responsibility, and she also she has sort of this self-righteousness that keeps her going, but that also keeps her apart from others.
She's isolated, but that's as much a problem. That's as much a fault of hers as well as everyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else has put her in that role. I mean, she probably chose it for herself, but they've gone along with it.
Well, one of the ongoing themes, really, is that the Slayer, you know, there's one and she's alone. And she tried to change that by making more Slayers, and I think the point of season 8 is that she's still alone, even despite that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's enforced by both her and by the people around her.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I get why she cut Giles off. Again, I say she's not right, because she still has to figure out that people have to use their own judgment without, you know, and it's not always going to coincide with hers, but, like, I get where, you know, she is now the leader of all these people that Fate is in her hands, and if somebody is working, somebody on her team is working outside of her, especially with somebody who, again, right, like you said, Florence, Faith to her is still that girl. So when it's with somebody like Faith, it can be, like, and it's somebody who's close to her as Giles, like, that immediate snap, cut him off. I get it, but I think it's wrong.
Well, and she is as harsh to herself as she is to others, so I think that's part of it, too. I mean, she's very hard on herself, but she doesn't allow herself to sort of be forgiven or be redeemed, and she doesn't really allow others to do that, either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they totally set it up for Giles and Faith to basically save the entire, you know, camp of Slayers at some point in the future.
I'm totally prepared to read their spin-off series anytime they want to put that out.
Alright, so, question number 6. Oh, that was the one about the Doctor. But, oh, the other part was, did you get the Alan Moore reference?
No.
Which I didn't get upon the first
reading,
because I didn't know as much.
The bearded wizard of...
Yeah, the great... bearded wizard of Northampton.
Alright.
Yes, that's one of Giles' contacts. And at the time, when it first came out, I didn't know that's where Alan Moore lived.
Aha, I didn't get it. Cute.
Alright, so here we are, issue 10. Discuss. They have to rescue the prince. Who is that? Is Willow the betrayer? Is it Dark Willow or R. Willow or someone else?
I know, that was a huge, huge moment.
That whole scene
and sequence
was confusing.
Issue 10 is the issue where they sort of visit a time warpy demon thing to get some answers, which they don't really get. But it's Willow and Buffy together.
Yeah, I mean, that whole scene was definitely just to play on Will's and Buffy's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was confusing.
Wait, where are we?
the standalone where they visit the house and they go to that kind of alternate dimension and they meet the other demon.
What issue was that, Susie?
That was issue 10.
Issue 10.
And that feeds to me directly into the revelation later of Willow in the future.
But so I'll go over the first part of that, is that the guardian of the time warpy demon thing says to the, you know, is also kind of time warped and doesn't nonlinear, and she says to them, and all that matters is that you save rescue the prince.
Oh,
so,
and nobody got that yet.
Yeah,
oh.
We have not gotten there yet.
You're right,
and,
yeah,
I
want to
know what that is that, could it be Twilight? You know, I don't know. But
know
so
yet.
Then the second part of the question is, and during that issue, we see Buffy and Willow doing bad things, and first, we see stuff that they have already done, and then we see something that hasn't happened yet, which is Buffy laying on the ground, apparently badly wounded, and it said that she is betrayed by someone very close to her, and the implication that it's Willow.
Yep. Well, and then, and Willow even says, you know, when she's asked if she betrayed Buffy, she says, no more than I already have. But that's in the middle of a time warpy moment, so I don't know if that really means it hasn't happened yet, or she also mentions that she meets the Minder in the future, and she's aware of that in the present. So it's possible that Willow is aware of something that she's going to do that has already happened in her. So
that or that she was at that moment
right.
aware of it.
Right, and obviously it has something to do with the half-naked snake woman.
Yes.
So is that does the half-naked snake woman, is that part of canon in
no.
the series?
No,
she's
that's new. But the canon in the series is that Willow has slowly, over the time, length of the series, become a very powerful witch. Starting with, at the beginning, she had no magical powers, and she started, but she was very smart, and then she started studying magic and learning and becoming a witch and getting
well, she
really
found out she
really
had
powerful.
More innate potential than most
mm-hmm.
at that point.
Mm-hmm. And so then she started getting really, really powerful and reckless. And after her girlfriend Tara gets killed, she goes ballistic and goes a bit crazy and kills the person who killed Tara, albeit, which turns out to be Warren.
By skinning him alive.
Was Warren. And yes, she skins him alive. And then Amy brings him back.
I have to admit that if, like, I would say my motivation for watching the Buffy series is half Florence really wanting me to watch it, and half her.
Shh.
Allison Hannigan.
Oh.
Really? Allison Hannigan?
Oh my god.
She's definitely hot.
I always saw her as kind of annoying, but all I really saw her in was in American Pie.
That's why Marty thinks she's hot.
Yeah, totally.
Have you not
so
met
you're
all the
annoying chicks?
Have you not met all the women Marty has ever dated?
I'm not going there.
I said dated, not married.
So anyway, so after she kills him, then she goes really, really nuts and like just is overpowered by what she can do and her grief and tries to destroy the world and it's all bad and she gets stopped.
Willow is Phoenix.
Yeah.
Then she has to be.
I mean, seriously, Willow is Phoenix.
Well, right, and there is actually a scene in Buffy that is then echoed, like seemingly frame from frame, in X-Men with the Phoenix arc. So I'd argue that the concept was originated in X-Men, but the way it was filmed and shot was.
Well, no,
I'm
talking more about the comic Phoenix than that. Willow was definitely based after the comic Phoenix, but I can see the movie Phoenix being based after Willow.
Joss Whedon has admitted that he's heavily influenced by 70s and 80s X-Men. In fact,
totally.
I think he said Buffy's based on Kitty Pryde.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Although Kitty's a little smarter.
I can see that.
And book smarts, anyway.
Yeah. And you can definitely see those influences when he came in and did Astonishing X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
He basically, you know, made Emma Frost and Kitty Pryde characters from the Buffyverse, really. At least they could have easily fit in. And...
That's true.
Right, yeah. They wouldn't. They weren't, like, just carbon copies, but yeah. They definitely could have fit in.
All right, next question.
So anyway, so the Snake Woman, getting all the way back to that, is that's from the comics, but that's something she probably shouldn't be dabbling with, because there is the very strong possibility that she might lose control again.
So also kind of cheating on her girlfriend.
Totally.
Too,
I was going to say,
we
like,
don't like her girlfriend, so it's not that big a deal.
Wait, what?
But I don't like her girlfriend, so that's not
that makes sense.
Does
okay.
nobody like, does nobody like Kennedy because everyone thinks she belongs with Buffy?
No. No one likes Kennedy because they think that she
nobody
should
wants...
say in mourning for Tara. Everyone loved Tara.
Oh,
Tara. So
Tara was awesome, but
I
don't think she should have stayed in mourning for Tara forever, but the way they introduced Kennedy and the character she is and the actress who played her just was very annoying.
I mean, that basically...
That's all there is to it.
Fandom
like,
pretty
the actress
much...
who played her was very pretty, I'll give her that.
Fandom felt that she was... Fandom was in love with Tara. Mm-hmm. I mean, completely and utterly in love with Tara. So anyone who followed up...
A very big faction of it. There's not, like, every... So we can't, speak for every Buffy fan in the world.
Well, what I mean...
Because then we'd say that every Buffy fan in the world loves Spike and Tara and hates Kennedy and Riley.
What I mean...
And that's true for us and most of the people we know, but, you know...
What I mean is that whoever followed Tara, much like in real life when you break up or lose the one, whoever follows... is going to have a much tougher time of it.
Yeah. But I say if it had been a different character, a different actress, and done a little bit differently, it would have been a lot easier to accept.
Maybe. Maybe not.
And maybe they knew it wouldn't be well received, and so they threw an abrasive character in there and just kind of, like, put it out there.
And
then, you know, they could have just had it, like, end at that, just have been a rebound and not have her pop up in the comics again.
I totally
know?
Agree with that. She did not need to be the new partner of Willow that would stay with her for years and recur in the series.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, let's get back to the Snake Woman and how she visits the Snake
oh,
Woman.
Boy.
I mean, you don't think it's cheating?
Oh, totally.
It's cheating. I just don't care.
I mean, it's like
that part doesn't bother me. That it might be very.
So you prefer Snake Woman over Kennedy even?
Oh yeah.
So here's a question: Do you think Kennedy knows about the Snake Woman?
No. I think Willow is keeping Snake Woman a secret.
Something she knows. Tara's Willow is doing some kind of studying, and maybe she knows the Snake Woman as well, but she doesn't know the extent.
Because there was a scene, I mean, the scene where she visits her and then she comes back.
Yeah, in the very last issue.
Yeah.
When Kennedy's all smiley and Willow's obviously...
Kennedy has got to have some sort of, like, why does she feel bad about having sex with me?
Yeah. Why does she black out when she's having sex with me?
So...
I think she knows that they're having sex was involved in some kind of ritual. But again, she doesn't know what the details.
Was it clear that Kennedy was going to become a Slayer in this series?
Yeah.
She was already a Slayer.
She already was. Okay.
Yeah.
No, she wasn't already. But she was somebody they had identified as someone who could possibly become a Slayer. And then when all the Slayers became Slayers, Kennedy did as well.
You're right. Yes. But okay, on a side note, though, one of the things that I think makes Kennedy a less than ideal partner for Willow is that she idolizes her and does not call her on her shit. And the power dynamic between them is that, like, Kennedy will support anything Willow does completely unquestioningly.
Well, from what I've seen in the series, they pretty much present Willow as almost perfect, you know, at least in her judgments. She's not presented with very many flaws
in the comic
series anyway.
Somebody who wouldn't have read and seen any Buffy. That's interesting because, yeah, that doesn't come across at all knowing the history.
True, yeah. I mean, she's powerful, she is a good ally,
and
everybody loves her.
And
everybody loves her,
very...
she supports everybody.
Yeah.
She can solve any problem with
her
magic.
She can solve any problem with her magic, except for Dawn. but still, Dawn loves her.
Well, Willow and Tara were Dawn's parental figures for a while there.
Okay.
Yes.
There are 6 really scenes where the Snake Woman's breasts are covered. No, no, those are individual like panels in scenes where the Snake Woman's breasts are covered. Just her nipples are covered up by random things, either her hair or her arms.
Or fog.
But there's one scene where she should have a nipple, definitely, but she just doesn't.
Marty's complaining about too much gratuitous nudity in the comic books.
Yeah, that's
or not enough gratuitous nudity.
It's taboo in the comic book. A woman's nipple. It's taboo.
Okay, yeah. Moving on.
who is everybody's favorite character?
Mm.
I'm interested to know that.
Well, right now, mine's the Snake Woman.
That's Florence's costume next year.
Just going with the comic books right now, I think Xander. He's not always my favorite character, although he's always been one of them. But just the way, what they're doing with him right now, Xander.
Okay. What about you, Jason?
I don't know.
They have to have appeared in the comic. You can't pull somebody from the series.
I would probably go along with Xander as well. I think he actually has done very well. As far as the character goes, I always liked Xander in the TV series as well.
Right, but he wasn't like the number one favorite character for me. I've always really liked him, but there'd be others.
He's done very well in this. I have to say I like Dawn a lot better in this than I ever did in the TV series. I really enjoy the interplay between Xander and Dawn in the comic series a lot.
All right.
Yeah, they have a good relationship. I loved Dawn fighting the Mechadon.
Yes. Well,
yeah.
I cried
very, very cute, very cute. But where did the Mechadon come from?
I'm
magic.
Myself.
Just
like,
magic
you know,
up the Mechadon.
They clearly, those Japanese vampires had a lot of magic mojo, so
okay. They
had some technical and magic people working on that.
Yes, I found it equally plausible that they just contracted it out, like had it built by, savvy robot people.
Very dedicated Japanese workers.
And whipped it out in 5 minutes.
they've been studying Buffy and everything.
Yeah, they've known
they
that Dawn is around.
Yeah, they lured them into the trap and had that ready for Dawn. So
they knew that they were going to unleash Dawn upon downtown Tokyo.
Yeah.
What about you, Florence? Favorite character?
I would have to say Faith, actually. Although I think Xander is a really good choice as well. But I've always loved Faith, and I find her story really interesting.
She's not one of my favorite characters. I like her most of the time, but that arc was just done very well.
Yeah.
I liked the flashbacks during the Faith arc a lot.
Yeah.
The flashbacks to the mayor. I really enjoyed the bits with the mayor.
I can see where that would be really confusing to people who hadn't seen any of the series, because they didn't go to great lengths to really explain who he was and what that relationship had been. They explain the feelings behind it, but not...
Right. When she talks about being, an older man at a time that she felt loved, but he kind of played her.
We have no idea what they were talking about.
I would say she wins the award for most fucked up character.
Yeah.
Here's an aside for you. Here's an aside for you. The only person who can answer this is Susie.
Okay, me.
Uh-huh. Yes, you. How did you feel about the two unaired episodes in season 3? Were you as angry as I was at the time?
Season 3, that was a weird time in my television viewing history because I was living at the shelter.
Okay.
And we had group every Tuesday night, and I would tape it. I would tape Buffy, not the group. I didn't really have access to the internet, so I didn't know what was going on then.
Oh.
I just knew that, like, 1 week there'd be Buffy, and then the next week there wouldn't, and then that the season finale was just delayed. And then I would, see it and watch it and love it. I didn't really know the reason behind any of that.
Yeah, I was pretty...
And that's also the one time I missed an episode of Buffy. Was during season 3, it was the Christmas episode, and I didn't see that until the DVDs came out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was pretty pissed off about the fact that that there were two episodes that my country was too fucked up to show.
It was because it was around the time of Columbine, right? And there was,
one
episode
dealt with, like, one dealt with a student having a gun at the school.
Mm-hmm.
Although it wasn't technically a school shooting episode, but there was
Well,
if this is a country that had canceled Invader Zim because of 9/11,
and then the final episode was about the school being destroyed, and apparently they felt that high school students weren't going to be able to deal with that. It was going to be too traumatic.
More traumatic for the adults and for the high school students, probably.
Oh no, I had just graduated at the time.
So many people I know who have only seen Buffy in DVDs. That whole
thing was the controversy was missing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get to say who my favorite character was.
You did say who your favorite character was. You said Snake Woman.
Well, I said right now she was.
Okay, Marty's your favorite character.
But
I didn't say Marty.
I think until a certain point
my favorite character was Satsu. Mm. And then when Dracula was introduced, he became my new favorite.
Dracula was pretty cool.
Okay, that actually bridges me to the next question.
Wait,
okay,
Mike?
I am interested in why Satsu, though.
I don't know. I just really liked her. And, like, I mean, we basically knew that she was the one that was in love with Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
From the chapstick.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know.
Buns.
I just thought she was cool. And, like, and then she became a bigger part, and I really enjoyed that. And then now it sounds
because
like she will
Buffy
be a much less part, which is kind of disappointing.
My favorite, I also have to go with Xander, despite the eye patch. But a close second would definitely be Willow. Least favorite character is Frey.
Well,
after watching, reading those, I have no desire to go read that issue arc.
You know, it's interesting, because I loved Frey at the time, but I also found her a little annoying in this.
Oh my god.
Well, she's exactly like Buffy.
I wanted to tear up those issues.
Oh, please don't.
Because I can stand reading
it. Yeah, I like Frey. But it's definitely where you have to read her story. This is, she's very, like, she's a character that we only really see through Buffy's eyes right now.
She'd have been very much in place, in place in, like, a X-Men 2099 issue or something like that. She seems very 90s.
There's so much more to her than that.
What's that?
There's just so much more to her than that.
But
she
seems,
see, like,
she seems very...
She
seems very much a throwback of what the early 90s version of the future was.
The flying cars.
It's like very dystopic. And, like, as you get higher in the city, it's like more...
The black and purple
neon
speech patterns
are
a big part of that, too.
Okay, sorry, Susie, when you're talking at the same time, we can't hear you at all.
Oh, so I've not really read any of the X-Men 2099 or any of that stuff, so, yeah, I don't really know how close that is or how annoying that would be.
I know, it seems fresh to me when I first read it, but I don't know what else is out there.
But, yeah, her miniseries, the Frey miniseries, she's really a very well-fleshed-out character, and there's a lot of... She has a very interesting and really different history from Buffy's.
I agree that it's worth... I think it's a worth reading.
Yeah.
Like, I think you might like it more than you think you're going to like it right now.
I did laugh out loud when she said the word spaz and Buffy said that phrase stood the test of time.
Alright, so we were starting to talk about this just a little while ago, so... Question number 7, new couples, Buffy/Satsu, which we've already pretty much discussed, and Xander/Renee/Dracula.
Oh, the Xander-Dracula, that whole thing made me so happy and charmed. Because
I thought
that
was an awesome direction to take it in.
I know, I hated the Dracula episode, which I clearly need to show Marty after this, but... at the time, I really, really disliked it, and now with this new twist on it, I think I will enjoy it much more.
Well,
I got why a lot of people hated it, because it was just a very standalone thing with no connection to any other part of the show, and
that was
a very different tone, and Dracula is a completely different vampire from all the previous vampires, and really cheesy and annoying.
That was the season premiere, wasn't it?
Season premiere of season 5, and where... The previous season had ended with Restless, the episode with all these dreams.
Oh, yeah.
Incredibly intense and cryptic. And, like, we spent
all
summer analyzing it.
Which I think is my favorite episode of the entire series.
The thing is that episode, I think everyone was like, whoa, this is going to be really cool. And it was a little bit of a letdown for a season premiere after such a long time.
Yeah, it was a funny idea that, oh my god, Buffy meeting Dracula. And then, Dracula is so lame.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have done it.
But yeah, for a season premiere, for the hype that I got from the WB, I get why a lot of people did not like that episode, but I think it's pretty damn funny.
Yeah, as a standalone in the middle of the season, it would have been a funny, like, comic moment in between arcs, yeah.
I love the idea of Dracula as just this incredibly insecure...
Well, and he is a great character in this, and especially the part where he talks about, do you know who I am?
Yes.
You know, don't be scared of Dracula the vampire. He's scared of Dracula the man.
Yeah.
The
old man.
That was
the old man, yeah.
So did Dracula lose his abilities too during the
whole
thing?
I think that was the
implication.
Yeah, that was
implication.
He did.
Now he's just a vampire.
His extra vampire.
Back. So he's just a normal vampire now.
Yeah.
Now he's just a normal Buffyverse vampire.
Except that he's still got the weapon that caused them all to have the powers in the first place.
Mm.
I mean, it doesn't seem like
it
would be that difficult for him.
Back,
exactly.
Yeah.
He could just cast the spell again at home. When
and
home.
It's fiction.
Except
they
what
can write
you guys
anything
were saying,
they want.
That nothing happens without consequences. If he did lose his powers, according to you guys, Joss Whedon wouldn't just magic them back.
Yeah,
without
I don't
some
think
sort
he
of
would.
Consequence.
Or at
you
least
know?
Not easily.
What was one of the most horrible things that that Willow did during her her spree?
Reasons.
She killed Warren. Except, she didn't.
Well,
she did,
you know what?
But
he's actually, Jadass has said that he had forgotten that she had killed Warren and not just skinned him. He'd actually forgotten that Warren was dead and had meant to. And when he started writing this, he just had forgotten.
Yeah, but again, that's, that's the thing, is that Mike is saying nothing happens without consequences. They don't, you know what, they do.
These
I mean, hell.
Well, except that the consequences Willow suffered, she still suffered them for killing Warren, even
though
Warren is dead.
Yeah, this is true. But again, what I'm getting at is it's fiction. They can, if they want to do something, they'll do it.
Yeah.
They'll figure it out.
It's true,
they'll figure
it
out, but I think, that's not right. Nothing. That's not the, it's impossible for things to happen without consequences. It's that they don't let things happen without consequences.
Right.
Is there another question? How many questions do you have?
Another question? I've got question number 9. We've already really discussed that. It was, can Xander catch a break, please? Number 10. How are Buffy and Mel alike, and how are they different? We're going to
pray. Actually, I think we might need to wrap up soon because we're already at the hour and a half point. Do you want to skim through the remaining questions and see which might be
All right, then we have, we have 3 more and one's not really a question. So, 11. Going by the law of 3, what is Dawn's next transformation?
Uh-huh.
So she's become a giant and now she's a centaur. Obviously,
a boy.
You can't have 3. A boy?
A boy.
She's going to become a boy. Interesting.
Damn.
Now, do we think...
She could...
So, do we think her being the key has anything to do with, the spell going on, going so far?
She could be
I
the
really
princess
don't.
They need to rescue.
Oh.
Wait, sorry, what?
She could be the prince they have to rescue.
That is really funny.
I was just going to say, if she became a boy, she and Andrew could
Oh, wrong in so many ways. I really don't think Dawn being the key
has anything to do with the spells and the transformations.
What do you mean the key?
Yeah, that's a whole other story.
Oh, boy, that's too complicated. We're not going to even touch on it. I should have.
You have the weight of 7 years of TV on my shoulders.
More like 3 or 4, but...
It's like a monkey on your back.
Okay, question 12, which is the last real question. What is Dark Willow's endgame, and is it with or against Twilight's endgame?
That's totally what I want to talk about. So...
Where does it go from here?
Yeah, what happens in the final issue?
That quote was from Mike,
okay, so
the one who
then
has
I'll
not
go
seen
to issue or question number 13. Will issue 19 ever come out?
It's already been delayed twice.
You say the final issue.
the final issue of this arc.
Okay.
It is the final issue.
I was going to ask earlier, when does season 8 end?
Issue 24 or 24?
They've said now that it's more going to be 30 issues or so.
Because the standard... season of television has 22 episodes. 22
right.
or 24.
When they plotted it out, it got expanded, and now I think it's around 30.
Yeah. Well, because, as Jason mentioned, these issues are not as substantive as an entire episode. So.
Right.
It's really more a single arc would be, an episode.
An episode,
Two-parter or something.
Yeah.
So, Willow's Endgame, my theory is that Well, so, okay, Mike hasn't read the end of Frey, but I'll go ahead and spoil it because it's kind of referenced in this. But in the future, we find out that they did get rid of magic in Buffy's generation completely. No more Slayers,
yeah.
No more demons, no more vampires, gone.
Well, they alluded to that earlier, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that that's what all of this is leading up to, is
and
how
then,
that
so
happen.
300 years later, Frey is the very first Slayer to be called again because there are some vampires emerging again.
Right.
So Twilight is Hearth, then?
Mm-hmm.
What's Hearth?
I don't think so. Hearth is Frey's brother.
Oh, the
and
vampire
and
boy.
That's part of her backstory, is that
no.
her brother gets turned into a vampire. Gets killed by a vampire and then turned into a vampire, but she doesn't know. She just knows he gets killed by a vampire.
Right. Well, he's a twin, so they were born
yes.
at the same time, and he got the Slayer memories inside of her.
Interesting.
Yes.
I thought they
right,
both
along with
that.
The powers, every Slayer gets the
she,
collective memories of the previous Slayers.
Right. She has the physical strength and power, and he has all the knowledge and the memories from the previous Slayers. So she's totally cut off from her heritage and trying to figure out what's going on, just reading the Watchers' diaries. Then the Watchers are all gone at that point, too. So, yeah, I think that Willow's game somehow, I think, is going to appear as betrayal, but is... in her own mind or code is justified
mm-hmm.
by wiping out all the evil.
Right. Well, actually, I don't know, because it seems like Twilight's end game is to wipe out all the vampire or all the magic.
True.
So is what Dark Willow actually trying to do, trying to stop that, but somehow by betraying Buffy, by killing her or whatever. I don't know.
Well,
and, but we run the risk of completely negating Frey.
Well, and is she really Dark Willow? Like, what is it? What was it with her saying she couldn't muster much magic?
Well, she's somehow managed to stay alive for 500 years, or whatever, 300, unless she's jumped through time.
Well, and it could very well be that, this series will wipe out Frey. I mean, it could...
It's true.
Be an alternate future that just doesn't happen after this. That maybe Frey will sacrifice herself, sacrifice her entire timeline.
True.
That is possible, but I don't quite see that happening.
I have to say that, and this is kind of unrelated, it really bothered me the introduction of their sister, Phrase and
because she looked exactly
because
like
she
Buffy.
Looked exactly like Buffy, and
yeah.
I was so confused.
Yeah.
And I've read Frey, but I totally didn't remember she had a sister at all.
Yeah, I didn't like the art as much in that one. They got a little more cartoony, and yeah. I
right. Well, that's the Frey artist, the original Frey artist.
Yeah,
came
actually,
back
I dig his art.
And yeah, his faces aren't as distinctive between characters. I agree. And yeah, if I hadn't had just read Frey, I might have, like, not immediately recognized that character.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm not sure if I had or not, but I think I did.
So, was anyone else fooled, and I don't know what the answer to this is because most people here hadn't watched the series, but was anyone else fooled by the misdirection of Drusilla being the dark-haired, crazy woman who's lived for hundreds of years?
I did not pick up on that. I didn't think it was Drusilla at all.
Really? I totally did.
When I read it, I'm like, well, it's either Drew or Willow, and I don't think it's Drew.
I did not think it was Willow for a second until the reveal of that panel.
Oh, I totally thought
it was Willow.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Just
I thought
me,
it was too, but then I didn't know who Drusilla was.
Well, she is a crazy vampire who's dark-haired, who has done a lot to hurt Buffy.
And who has not yet died in our continuity, so...
Yeah, she is...
Could very well have continued living.
Drusilla was
she's
an
great.
Awesome,
I love her.
Awesome character.
Yeah.
So does...
She was Spike's... long-term vampire lover.
I'm assuming that Drusilla is one of the ones that got sold to IDW.
We haven't seen her there at all.
Okay.
She did appear on Angel most recently on the TV.
Yeah, the last time we saw her was on an episode of Angel, but...
Well...
Yeah, I haven't seen her in either series. Because as cool as she is, she's not as pivotal.
Wait, she brings back a... A different story for both Angel and Spike that hasn't really been part of their story in a long time.
The blonde one.
Darla.
No, the other blonde one. She got spiked, didn't she? Or slayed.
Unnecessary.
What?
The other blonde vampire.
Not
other
Darla?
Than Darla. The ditzy one.
Buffy.
Oh! the receptionist.
There's
no.
going to be an issue all about her.
Really?
Yeah, like, very soon, yeah. I
one
saw it in the solicitations.
Buffy. Who went and crossed over the angel?
Yes, who was the angel's receptionist.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We're going
anyway.
Yeah.
So, we will resolve that offline.
Well, should we wrap it up?
Probably. So, in conclusion, we have no idea what's going to happen in the next issue. It could be anything.
And some of us have no idea what's happened.
Already.
So,
yes.
And probably someone will die.
Do a, once the next issue does come out, do like a mini 15-minute podcast or something about it?
Yeah, well,
wrap things up.
Yeah, well, we should just talk about it in our weekly podcast
yeah.
that, you know, we're going to
okay.
always do, like, normal.
Okay.
Okay. Well, just, you know, remember to find out if I can be there.
Yes.
We should
yes.
Bring up what the next book club is going to be.
Ooh, yeah.
Whose pick is it?
Is it back to Marty's? I mean, it's back to the beginning.
I picked first, I think.
You did. You picked. You're
yeah.
the one that picked Northlanders, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So we're back to the beginning, Vicini.
All right. I'm picking Scott Pilgrim.
Cool.
It's awesome. Scott Pilgrim.
Is that the name of
the author or the comic?
That's the comic. Scott Pilgrim. It's by Oni Press. O-N-I.
Uh-huh.
And it's digest sized. There are 4 volumes out. we can just do the first one. Or, once you guys read the first one, I'm thinking you're going to want to read the other 3.
How old are they?
Within the past couple of years.
Okay.
So you
I will see if my library has it.
I got them from the library.
I will try to find some other way.
I got them from the library. I don't think they're that expensive.
They're digest size, so not too big?
They're thick, but they're manga size.
Were they released individual issues, or just...
No, just mangas, and I am desperately waiting for Scott Pilgrim number 5, but it will be coming.
Is it something that comes out in individual issues, or no?
Nope.
It just comes out in digest.
Who's going to the sources Friday? For their big 25-cent comic sale.
Yeah, we're not going to be in town.
Oh, that's right, you guys won't be
I won't be here.
I may have to.
Yeah, you can pick up Scott Pilgrim there.
If it's for 25 cents, I'll look for it.
Yeah, it's not for 25 cents.
Hey, if it's 25 cents, get like one for each of us, I'll reimburse.
Yeah.
I think that the individual digests are either $10 or $15 a piece.
Well, I will check my library, and if it's not there, I will try to find it somewhere else.
Well, when one of us down here is able to procure from the library, let everybody else know so that we can...
Marty and Florence will buy it, and they'll send it to you, Susie.
Okay.
Alright.
I have requested a special privilege for the end of the episode.
What?
I have requested something for the end of the episode. So
yes.
Tell me when we're at.
I think we're wrapping up.
Okay, so once I say this, nobody can say anything else. Ready?
Ready.